Hey folks, this is your host Brian Cook with a few words from our new sponsor, T-Fury. T-Fury is the original pop culture t-shirt destination, selling unique designs every day since 2008. You can snag their shirts for only 24 hours starting at midnight. Missing a shirt from the past and want to get it again? Head to the T-Fury Gallery where you can buy some old designs still in print and vote on others to come back from the dead. Every 2 to 4 weeks, T-Fury adds more designs to their gallery, so be sure to keep an eye out for the return of your favorite shirts. T-Fury shirts cover all your favorite topics and fandoms. They've got everything from gaming, sci-fi, anime, TV, movies, pop culture, and more. Their t-shirts change daily, so check back as often as you'd like. Also, don't forget about the T-Fury After Hours sale. If you missed the day's shirt by only a little, they keep the sale going into the wee hours of the morning just for you. Check out tfury.com/nerdist and see what today's shirt is all about.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 45 of the Competitive Erotic Fan Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Today you're going to hear round one from a very special LA Championship edition of the show, recorded December 17th, 2013 at the Nerdmelt Theater, featuring past winners Solomon Giorgio, David Huntsberger, Matt Ingebretson, Mike Bridenstine, and Jesse Elias, reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy. And please keep it going for your first round one comic who's brought a prepared piece, Mike Bridenstine, ladies and gentlemen.
It's the autumn of 1984, and Mrs. LaRusso's son, Daniel, has just left for his big beach party with his new pal, Freddy. Daniel knew Freddy was pretty cool because when he met him, he was wearing a t-shirt that said, "Makin' Bacon," with two cartoon pigs fucking on it. Plus, he didn't care at all that Daniel just smashed his face in by karate kicking the door to their building. Reseda, California was going to be A-OK after all. Mrs. LaRusso is happy that her son was adjusting so well, but she sure was lonely. She'd raised Daniel as a single mother in Newark ever since her husband died in some sort of Guido Mafia hit or something. And she hadn't felt a dick or balls in a really long time. Just then, there was a knock at the door. It was the handyman, Mr. Miyagi. And Mr. Miyagi was also super horny. He hadn't boned any of the building's tenants since he broke things off with the old lady who sits by the pool. She used to be excellent in the sack, but she kept getting older. And Mr. Miyagi was looking for some hot younger pussy he could get on the regular. Daniel's new friend Freddy had offered to suck Mr. Miyagi's dick to get the pool fixed one time, but Mr. Miyagi was not into that homo shit. So the whole time Daniel LaRusso was at the beach party seeing how thick and hot Elizabeth Shue's character looked in her one piece, and then getting beat up by the Cobra Kai, Mr. Miyagi was making his move on Daniel's mom. First, Mr. Miyagi fixed the faucet, shirtless, so Daniel's mom could peep his old bod. Mrs. LaRusso was turned on immediately by his salt and pepper chest hairs, but knew she really had to take a shit. So she secretly went to the bathroom, pretending to be unpacking boxes, and she shat a bunch. Mr. Miyagi knew Daniel's mom was taking a shit the entire time. She was making a lot of shit sounds. But he didn't care. That was kind of his thing. And when Mrs. LaRusso emerged from her Italian food dump, she was wearing nothing but a sexy nightie made out of toilet paper in the bathroom. Miyagi said, "That's not the only plumbing that works around here." And he whipped out his old Asian dick. Walked up behind Mrs. LaRusso and began to fuck her in her recently shitty butthole. And with his hands, Mr. Miyagi did some next-level ninja shit to Mrs. LaRusso's hairy Italian 80s vagina. She shat and came and shat and came. It was the best sex she'd ever had. I love you, Mrs. LaRusso told him. You're all right, LaRusso, he replied. And from that moment on, unbeknownst to movie viewers, the two of them began a secretive, passionate romance. And they'd fuck every time Daniel was away at school or at a date with Elizabeth Shue's character. Remember when Mrs. LaRusso made Daniel breakfast and she was in such a great mood before she saw his black eye? Sex. Remember how Mr. Miyagi was in a great mood when he pretended to fix the faucet a second time while Daniel practiced karate from that book? Sex. You know why Mr. Miyagi fixed Daniel's son's bike? Sex. And the reason he made Daniel send a costume to wear for the school's Halloween dance? Because he wanted him out of the house so we could fuck the Italian shit out of Daniel's mom again. Little known fact, while Daniel was running away from the Cobra Kai because he poured a little bit of water on Johnny's marijuana toilet joint, Mr. Miyagi was taking to a whole nother fuck level with Daniel's mom in his handyman closet. First, he moved her Italian 80s bush out of the way and performed a rare and mystical oriental form of eating a pussy that involved bonsai trees and chopsticks. Then he let Mrs. LaRusso slide up and down his dick while he yelled instructions to her. Up, down, up, down. Then he taught her how to stand on his boner and do the crane kick to practice her balance. At first, Daniel's mom thought that it was just hard work, but then she eventually, when she saw the results, she trusted him in his old foreign techniques. Mr. Miyagi was ready to go in for the kill. He clapped his hands together and rubbed them really fast, about to make her crotch explode with women jizz. But then Mr. Miyagi heard Mrs. LaRusso's son, Daniel, getting his ass kicked in the abandoned field next to the shack, and was all pissed off when Mrs. LaRusso got off to run back to apartment 20. I'm gonna kick the asses of the next five people I fucking see, Miyagi yelled. All backed up with karate cum. And that's when the Cobra Kai, when he saw the Cobra Kai and kicked the shit out of all of them, because nobody comes between Mr. Miyagi and getting his fuck on. But then the worst thing happened. Mr. Miyagi got tricked into teaching Danielson karate, which meant time away from Danielson's mom and her hot cougar puss. And Danielson's mom began getting lonely, especially with sex and in her pussy department. Then one afternoon, she was eating something gross at the Oriental Express restaurant by herself when she saw a handsome, evil karate sensei emerge from the Cobra Kai dojo. She rushed outside and thought of an excuse to try to meet him. Will you help me start my old, shitty, olive green Chevy Malibu station wagon? She asked flirtatiously. Sure, but my character in the movie is a real piece of shit, he replied. So if I do, you have to suck my dick or something. I thought you'd never ask. Danielson's mom replied because she was really into bad boys. The whole time Danielson's mom was sucking the evil karate sensei's dick, which was covered in tattoos of dragons for no reason, he was telling her a story about how an old Oriental man and an effeminate Italian kid from Newark came into his dojo and issued a challenge to his students. After Danielson's mom swallowed a massive glob of evil sensei cum, she realized he was talking about her son Daniel and Mr. Miyagi. But it was too late. She had already fallen in love with the evil sensei. What's your name, bitch? He asked. Mrs. LaRusso, she replied. But you can call me Daniel LaRusso's mom. What's yours? I don't know, he said. But you're my woman now. And he continued to bone her for a few weeks. He always struck first, he always struck hard, and he showed her no mercy. And every now and then, he'd reward her a trophy for certain sexual accomplishments. She liked her trophy for best nutsack liquor the best. Mr. Miyagi could sense that Danielson's mom had fallen for another man, and he began to drink heavily. That's why he was so hammered that night Daniel came over when he's in his army suit and missing his dead Asian wife who died in the war. But he knows what he has to do. First, he gave Daniel a birthday cake. Then he gave him one of his awesome classic cars. And then, while Daniel was at golf and stuff trying to make up with Elizabeth Shue's character, Mr. Miyagi decided to call Danielson's mom, and she told him everything. I can't decide, she complained. I love you and your Asian bedroom wisdom, But the sensei is younger and white and a real evil bad boy. Mr. Miyagi knew it had to be settled, and what better place than the 18th annual All-Valley Tournament? If Daniel-san wins, you come with me. If Johnny wins, you can go with the evil sensei. It's a deal, she said, and then she hung up and finished a giant plate of spaghetti or lasagna and took another shit. On the day of the tournament, the evil Cobra Kai sensei knew the deal too. That's why he'd be showing extra mercy, extra no mercy that day. Would have been funnier if I said it right. Mrs. LaRusso still didn't know who to root for. She kind of loves her son and everything, but it's just so confusing because she's in love with two karate masters. And it wouldn't be all that bad if Johnny won. She likes that the evil sensei is an evil entrepreneur. And Mr. Miyagi is older, and she just can't stand the thought of burying another husband. Elizabeth Shue's character knows the secret deal, too. She leans in and tells Mr. Miyagi, if Daniel loses, I'll probably fuck you. You will, he asks? Yeah, you have old Asian karate sex wisdom. And I think Daniel might be gay. He hasn't even tried to kiss me yet, and I'm hot and rich as fuck. Which was a very good point. But just then, Daniel leveled Johnny with a crane kick and won the tournament. And after everyone celebrated and left, Daniel-san's mom gave the evil Cobra Kai sensei one last goodbye blowjob in the car. That's when Mr. Miyagi walked up, pulled Daniel-san's mom out of the car, and karate chopped the evil sensei's evil dick right in half. The evil sensei was left to bleed out in his car. Wait for me at home, Mr. Miyagi said to Daniel-san's mom. Then he walked up to the evil dying sensei in his car and said, now suck my old Asian dick. And suck the evil sensei did. He sucked Mr. Miyagi all the way off because he also knew some ancient mystical oriental ways of blowjobs. He licked his balls and everything. It was the last evil accomplishment before dying and going to hell. And Mrs. LaRusso and Mr. Miyagi lived happily ever after until the next movie where he goes off to Okinawa, the end.
Mike Bridenstine. Thanks, buddy. Keep it going for Solomon Giorgio. There he is.
I feel so bad. It was a cool desert night. A star shined brightly above the city of Bethlehem. Three magi riding camels followed a young shepherd boy to a quaint barn outside the city. The three men stepped off their camels and headed inside the barn. Once inside, the three magi and the shepherd boy noticed a young Arab couple holding a newly born glowing babe surrounded by a myriad of farm animals. Damn, that's a white-ass baby! Declared one of the magi, Balthazar, an Arabian scholar. Excuse me, said the young Arab woman. My apologies, responded Casper, an Indian scholar. My friend can be quite crass sometimes. We've been sent here by the heavens to come kneel before the Son of God and the King of all men. You must be the Virgin Mother. Yes, I am. My name is Mary, and this is my husband Joseph, answered Mary. We would like to kneel before our new king and offer him our gifts and blessings, said Melchior, a Persian scholar. Oh, cool. I'm so glad you guys came here in the middle of the night because I totally need another cock block, replied Joseph. The three magi ignored Joseph's sarcasm, circled the young couple, and kneeled before the babe. Each of them pulled a small item from their tunics. I would like to offer our new king the gift of gold, said Melchior. I'd like to offer our new king the gift of frankincense, said Casper. I would like to offer our new king the gift of Damn, that white baby's got a big-ass dick! Exclaimed Balthazar. Melchior and Casper exhale in shock at Balthazar's statement. But no one in the room could deny that the newborn was well endowed. The shaft of his penis measured 2.5 king's feet, flaccid. Pardon me, sir, said Mary. It's cool, Mom, interrupted the baby. I know I'm well equipped. A shock looked spread across the room. You can talk? Inquired Casper. I don't know. Are there words coming out of my mouth right now? Yeah, I guess I can talk. I am the son of God. Sweet Jesus, said the shepherd. Sweet Jesus, I like the sound of that. Your mom's, that's my name from now on. Y'all can call me Sweet Jesus. As you wish, my son, said Mary. And Auntie Joseph stood up and said, I hate to interrupt, but I would like some alone time with my wife. Dang, stepdaddy, you ain't the only fool in here looking to bust a nut, declared Sweet Jesus. I got a suggestion. How about we load up a bowl of that frankincense, get a little wet, lube up our dicks with the myrrh, and see where things go. I don't know, Sweet Jesus. I'm sure your father, our Lord, would not approve, said Mary. At that moment, the clouds parted and the body of Jehovah stood above them. Nah, I'm cool with that. Said Jehovah. Aw, snap, we're gonna party tonight, Balthazar said, pulling out a pipe from his tunic. He proceeds to light the pipe and inhale. Anyone else want to hit this? Pass that shit over here, said the baby. I don't think so, Sweet Jesus, said Mary. Jesus began to look defeated. You should know better. Ladies first. Mary grabs a pipe and proceeds to smoke from it. And an elated look comes over the baby's face. Damn, Mama, I knew you was a freak. Everyone laughed and each took their turn at the pipe. A very relaxed vibe began to overcome each person. Sweet Jesus took the initiative and began to stroke the head of his penis. The shepherd boy followed suit and proceeded to fondle his testicles. The desire flowed through the room, and soon everyone was massaging their genitals in one way or another. Jehovah grinned at the scene and soon began to stroke his penis and his vagina. Casper and Melchior began to tenderly kiss each other while stroking the other's penis. Balthazar leaned into them, lifted Casper's buttocks, and inserted his penis deep within his rectum. The shepherd boy walked over and placed his penis between Casper and Melchior. They both started to suckle on the shepherd boy's penis. Sweet Jesus looked at the three magi and the shepherd. Damn! That's so sexy, it should be a sin! Joseph started to reach over for Mary's vagina, but Sweet Jesus swatted it away. What are you doing? Said Joseph. Sorry, stepdaddy, but a virgin pussy needs to be treated right, and I'm the motherfucker who can do that, stated Sweet Jesus. You can't be serious, said Joseph. Mary pushed Joseph away. Mind your business, Joseph. Now give mommy some of that good dick, Sweet Jesus. Oh, sweet Jesus hopped over to Mary's vagina and slowly began to insert his penis slowly. Mary began to moan in ecstasy with each inch inserted. Joseph stepped away, exasperated. He begins to look longingly at a nearby lamb. The lamb offers him a seductive look, then rolls over on its back and presents its vagina. Joseph releases a shriek of joy and immediately shoves the entirety of his penis in the lamb's vagina. He thrusts wildly as his sexual frustration overcomes him. Jehovah smiles kindly at the scene beneath him, and then he inserts his vagina into his own vagina, his penis into his own vagina, and began to thrust. Hours passed as everyone thrusted, changed positions, and continued thrusting. The Magi and the Shepherd Boy created a chain, four rectums and four penises connected together, all their prostates throbbing in joy. Sweet Jesus managed to get Mary to sit on her knees, and she rode his giant white penis as he lay on his back. Her face turned beet red with ecstasy. Joseph moved from one farm animal to the next. He set aside the lamb for a goat, the goat for a cow, and now had his eyes set on one of the camels. Jehovah pulled his penis out of his vagina and began to stroke his penis wildly. "I'm going to come," declared Jehovah. The words were electric. An overwhelming feeling possessed everyone, each declaring they were going to come in one way or another. Except for Joseph. The camel showed no interest in his phallus and spit in his eye. He returned to the other animals, but they all shunned him for throwing them aside. Everyone else began to orgasm and ejaculate. Jehovah's jism fell from the sky all around the world, and wherever it landed, a new civilization was formed. Mary screamed in ecstasy as she experienced her first orgasm. The three Magi gathered over the Shepherd Boy's face and covered it in their scholarly jism. Sweet Jesus pulled out of Mary, grabbed a nearby wash tub, and filled it to the top with his ejaculate. After a moment, Sweet Jesus stared at the wash tub, dipped his finger in his ejaculate, licked his finger, and said, "Anybody want some eggnog?" Everyone began to laugh as they merrily drank of Sweet Jesus' eggnog. Except for Joseph, who stood outside weeping in the cold. The end.
Solomon Giorgio. And keep it going for David Huntsberger.
Vincent bolted upright in bed. "They're all men. Everything else in advertising uses pretty women. Why all men?" He just had a terrible dream, which wasn't uncommon for him these days. Ever since he had taken the night security job at the local grocery store, he hadn't been able to sleep well. Vincent had walked with a limp his entire life, and working as a security guard was one of the few jobs where no one asked you why you were limping. It would be weird if you didn't limp. Of course, the job had come with a caveat. It was built on an Indian burial ground. And naming it the Savage Indian didn't do it any favors. Sure, they scalped prices, but did they have to use that as their motto? And did the mascot have to have blood on his face? Vincent had brushed these things aside, but he couldn't brush aside the dream. All of the characters from children's cereal bowls filling loads of their own cum into the bowls, just like the front of the boxes, where they all show off their cereal doused in milk. They all showed their cum into Vincent's face. "Taste our cum! Buy our cum!" they shouted at him. Vincent knew it wasn't a dream. The characters were going to be alive soon. He was sure of it. He sat up and put on his clothes in the stillness of the late night. It was a full moon out, and he had heard that the store can do funny things during a full moon. He took the No. 9 bus toward the store and exited a few blocks away. He didn't know why he felt such fear, but he couldn't shake it. The new Wheaties box had just arrived at the store that day. It was probably already on the shelves. He zipped up his jacket and glanced at his watch as he lumbered across the open expanse toward the Savage Indian. His limp was worse than ever in such cold. He knew he had precious time. He hoped his legs would carry him. He would need all his strength because somewhere inside that building, Mary Lou Retton was in deep trouble. But what do they have planned for poor Mary Lou? His breath burned inside his throat. He fought through it as he crossed the parking lot and headed for the door. He nearly collapsed as he reached it. Fumbling with his keys and fighting to stay upright, he braced himself and entered and headed toward the cereal aisle. As he drew closer and hobbled to the cereal, the noise became louder, a chanting from within the boxes. He reached the cereal and bent over slightly to look closer. The fronts of all the boxes were missing their mascots. The cereal lay flat in the bowl with no milk to support it. Bending in further and peering just over the tops of the boxes, Vincent could see a small area had been cleared. He was careful not to move any boxes as he leaned even further in and saw Mary Lou lying on an oatmeal packet. She was wearing her gymnastics outfit. Vincent couldn't help but notice how firm her body seemed. Around Mary Lou, the cereal creature slowly paraded naked. The Quaker Oats man had led them in the chant as they slowly circled the nubile gymnast. Ooh, cha, ha, ga, oom, na, ha, oom, na, ha, cha, oh, they repeated. Over and over, Vincent could see Mary Lou. He had no idea she was in the middle of. As they chanted, the Quaker spoke up. The Lord hath sent you among us, and he doth giveth you an almighty burden. For 'tis thy duty to expedite the harvest of seed. He then nodded to Lucky Leprechaun, who with a wave of his hand caused her gymnastic onesie to disappear. Fred Flintstone, completely naked and semi-erect, bellowed, "Get a look at them tits, Barn!" "They're great," mocked the naked Barney, his stubby, girthy cock already in his hand. Tony the Tiger stopped circling, upset. "So that's how it is? You guys just mock me? We can't all have gyms like Yabba Dabba Doo." The Quaker intervened. "Quiet! It is almost time." His body was trembling. He dabbed his kerchief against his forehead. They all stopped and faced Mary Lou. Snap, Crackle, and Pop were already ambitiously masturbating ahead of schedule. Mary Lou, seeing what was happening, took action. With a quick flip, she bounded onto her feet and launched into a back layout, which led her right into Captain Crunch's hungry sailor meat. Luckily for her, she began bobbing her mouth on it before she had any time to examine how grotesquely mutilated it was. It looked like it had been thrashed in a wood chipper many times. As she felt his muscle rise, she could tell he was close. With a back handspring, she vaulted into Count Chocula and a standing 69. "Oh, a treat," he exclaimed. But he was already primed to explode as she gently tongued his taint. Mary Lou removed him from her mouth and cartwheeled to the Quaker. She quickly fingered his asshole while riding Barney's tiny cave cock. Fred, simply from watching his friend receive such pleasure, exclaimed, "Yabba dabba doo!" and shit on the Trix rabbit's chest. Upon smelling it and seeing the Quaker convulse in pleasure, she sprinted across the room to Tony the Tiger. Sliding under his massive frame, she arched her back as he plunged into her. He began to purr and thump his tail as he pumped away. She reached up and fingered his asshole for good measure and jerked off Fred Flintstone with her free hand. Rolling out from underneath a soon-to-be geyser, she flip-flopped over to Lucky Leprechaun, who was staring at the Fruity Pebble box, now only showing Pebbles and Bam Bam on the front. She saw him firmly sawing away on his tiny leprechaun meat wand. She reached to help him, but he dismissed her hand abruptly. "Sorry, love. Maybe if you were 10. She looked up to see Captain Crunch was now slicing his saber blade across his chest, staring blankly ahead as a trickle of blood ran down his torso. She vaulted to the Crispy Boys, slid to her knees, and began furiously stroking and sucking Snap and Crackle while Pop entered her from behind. "Pop's gonna pop," he squealed.
"I fucking hate you," someone screamed
from the other side of the room. Vincent looked in with delight, and without realizing, he was getting quite hard himself. He hadn't had an erection in more than a decade, and so he unzipped and took it out just to remember what it looked like. Inside the den, Mary Lou stroked, licked, fingered, and sucked the cereal men to within moments of bursting. As she surveyed the room, she could see that moment was rapidly approaching, and she had no intention of being there. The Quaker exclaimed, "Harvest of seed! Harvest of seed!" Mary Lou looked through a gap in the boxes and saw Vincent. As if she were going to go for gold in the vault, she sprinted as fast as she could toward him. Behind her, giant arches of cartoon semen shot back and forth across the room, each cereal man emptying his load across the den, filling their cereal bowls. Mary Lou looked like an action hero escaping an exploding building. As she reached the edge of the shelf, she launched herself. Vincent, unsure what to do, turned slightly to the side. She floated gracefully through the air and latched onto his firmly erect penis like it were the uneven bars. For the first time in his life, he was thankful for his extreme lack of girth. Mary Lou looped around his glorious obelisk over and over. She released and did a reverse tuck, then a full, back into a full double. She was doing her Olympic routine. And it felt amazing. Vincent marbled from above. She swung once more into a full tuck and stuck her landing on the top of his shaft. Vincent was careful not to move as she jumped, turned, rolled, cartwheeled, flipped, and rode his shaft like a saddle. One final reverse roll and she popped up straight into a flip. Upon landing, she gazed into Vincent's eyes. He had never felt such joy. Overcome with euphoria, he laid his head back. An orgasm 3/4 of a century in the making was rapidly approaching. Mary Lou stepped back, enjoying the sight of giving him such pleasure, but in her step, she stumbled over the ridge of the head of his penis. She stumbled back, falling. Suddenly, she was propelled at an extreme rate. Vincent's ejaculation was carrying her. Like Bodhi at Bell's Beach, she was merely a part of this giant wave. It was headed right toward the Wheaties box. Then, the lights came on. Everything okay, Vince? The alarm was going off. Vincent composed himself, finished coming, and zipped his pants. He looked to the box. Mary Lou was proudly back on the cover, holding a bowl of Wheaties, brimming with milk. His milk. His milk that she had made. He looked at the approaching guards, then back to her. She winked, and Vincent walked away without a limp. Thanks.
David Huntsberger. And keep it going for Matt Ingebretson.
Thanks. So actually, it's a coincidence Brian asked me to do this because I recently stumbled across an early draft of 50 Shades of Grey that I would like to share with you now. I took a deep breath, pushed open the door, stumbled through, tripped over my own feet, and fell headfirst into the office. Double crap. It looks like I, Anastasia Steele, just a simple girl who on the outside seems to be innocent, but on the inside has super kinky sexual desires that involve men basically being mean to me. I have 2 left feet. Whoopsie. I was on my hands and knees in the doorway to Mr. Gray's office. I looked up and saw him, so young and attractive, very attractive. He's tall, dressed in a fine gray suit, white shirt, and black tie with unruly dark copper-colored hair and intense bright gray eyes. He winked at me, and I gave him a look back that said, "Hey, I know I may look demure, but I secretly fantasize about having terrifying BDSM sex." "Hi, I'm Christian Gray," he said. "Hi, I'm Anastasia Steele, and I'm..." But he cut me off, and before I knew it, he had both of my hands in a vice-like grip above his head and was pinning me to the wall using his lips. His other hand grabbed my hair and yanked down, bringing my face up, and his lips were on mine. My tongue tentatively joined his in a slow erotic dance. His erection was against me. Then I lied down on the couch in his office, and he poked his penis through his zipper and his pants and did me in the vagina missionary style. He came on my belly, and I went into the bathroom and wiped it up with some toilet paper and looked in the mirror and thought to myself, that was not good. When I came out of the bathroom, he was passed out and snoring on the couch. I decided to go ahead and leave. Days passed, and I finally received a call from him. "I need you," he said in a sexy, raspy voice. Despite his lackluster performance from before, I was super eager to have sex with him again. Maybe this time he would release my inner goddess. My inner super fucked up goddess. This time I showed up at his house and knocked on his door. He answered and immediately pulled me inside, led me to his bedroom, and threw me down on the bed. "Show me how you pleasure yourself. Keep still. We're going to have to work on keeping you still, baby. Let's see if we can make you come like this. You're so deliciously wet. God, I want you. I'm going to fuck you now, Miss Steele, hard. Come for me, Anna." Then he climbed on top of me and poked his penis through his pants. and bumped it around inside my vagina for a few minutes and then came on my belly. Then he looked at me and said, "How was that for you?" And I said, "So good." But in my head, I was like, "That was not good." I went into the bathroom to wipe the cum off my belly, but the toilet paper was gone. I looked around, but he was completely out of toilet paper. Also, his bathroom was gross. Loose hair everywhere. Also, there was a picture of a bunch of bulldogs playing poker above the toilet. I came out of the bathroom and he was passed out snoring. How annoying. I decided I might as well stay, so I laid down beside him, right in a wet spot on the sheets. It felt too warm to be cum. Did he just pee the bed? It almost felt as though the spot was getting bigger, and I looked down at his penis and saw urine streaming out of it. He was peeing the bed. I watched it happen, and I have to admit, it turned me on. I woke him up, got right in his face, and told him exactly what I wanted. I want to go again. I need you bad. I want you to control me. I want you to take advantage of me. I want you to dominate me. I want you to fuck me so hard I believe in God again. Anything for you, Anastasia, he said. Then he went to his closet and pulled out a 5-foot-long string of barbed anal beads. My heart fluttered. He winked. Was I finally going to be dominated in the sadomasochistic ways I always dreamed about? Was my inner goddess of going to be set free? The answer was no. Christian proceeded to shove the beads up his own ass and furiously jerk himself off to completion. A single dribble of translucent cum trickled out of his dick. As I watched it drop to the floor, I felt my inner goddess take her last breath and die within me. How was that for you? He asked. I replied, that was not good.
Matt Ingebretson. And your final round one competitor, Jesse Elias, ladies and gentlemen. Jesse Elias.
Hey, have you guys seen Pixar's Cars? Yeah, not me. Okay. So, once upon a time, there was a very fast race car named Lightning McQueen. One day, after a long day of racing, he saw a slutty female car looking at him suggestively. He knew she was a female car because she looked like a regular car, except pink. He knew she was slutty because she had a squishy butterfly decal sticker on her rear windshield, which is known as a tramp stamp in car slang. Hey, baby, he said jokingly, what do you say we go get some drive-thru? That was a dumb joke because cars don't eat drive-thru. They eat at gasoline restaurants. I'd love to, said the slutty girl car. My name's Christina. My name's Lightning McQueen, said Lightning McQueen, whose horrible name kept fucking the flow of prose and had to be changed for the rest of the story. But you can call me John. John became further aroused as he took a closer look at Christina's hot body. Her rear seat was all the way down, so he could see all the way inside her trunk, which was full of all kinds of slutty shit, like beach balls and umbrellas and rollerblades and a French toast maker that still needed to be taken back to Bed Bath & Beyond. Damn. Damn, thought John. He always liked women with junk in the trunk. But you could fit an entire bicycle in that thing. John wanted to impress his date, so he took her to an expensive gasoline restaurant that charged $4.17 instead of $3.58 per gallon because it was in an economically privileged part of town. You could tell that it was in an economically privileged part of town because there were a couple of smug latte-sipping electric cars sitting at the table next to them. Don't they have any sustainable energy alternatives on the menu? Said one of the electric cars. I don't eat fossil fuels. Fucking electric cars, John grumbled, nostalgic for the good old days when gas stations didn't serve their kind. After filling up on gas, John and Christina drove up to Lover's Point where they started making out in the back of her car. The back of her car, of course, being her asshole because she is a car. Yeah. She undid the latch on her hood and popped it open to show him the goods. John gasped when he saw that she had jumper cables on underneath. Jumper cables are the car version of nipple clamps. Oh, baby, I want to get under your chassis, said John. It's pronounced chassis, said Christina. Whatever, he shrugged. Why don't you get your ass over here and give me a hot jiffy? Christina paled. Are you serious? Do I look like I'm joking? The anthropomorphic race car asked rhetorically. I said, give me a hot jiffy. Oh, okay. Christina squatted over his face, straddling him with her rear tires. She released the oil drain on her oil drain valve. It poured all over John's face, the thick brown sludge dribbling down his perpetually affected, aren't I clever, one eyebrow raised Pixar cartoon expression. He smeared it. He smeared it around with his windshield wipers, relishing the hot stink of dirty engine gunk. Christina gasped. I didn't realize you were such a freak. I'm just getting started. John began licking the insides of her tires, a sexual act known as a rim job. In addition to giving her a rim job, he also licked her asshole. After about 3 hours of asshole licking, John got behind her and proceeded to ram the shit out of her rear bumper. Oh yeah, she screamed, fuck me. John did as she commanded, inserting his car penis into her big bouncy car pussy. I don't know if you've ever seen car pussy, but it's really bouncy. She orgasmed super hard and squirted transmission fluid everywhere. 2 weeks later, John was at the mechanic being seen for a strange burning sensation in his alternator. You should have been more careful, said the mechanic. Many sexually transmitted diseases are transmitted through transmission fluid. A lot of puns in this. John frowned. Give it to me straight, Doc. What's wrong with me? Now, you have to understand that around this time, there was a big AIDS epidemic happening in the car world. Cars everywhere were dying. I'm sorry, said the mechanic. You've been infected. From that point onward, John's life would never be the same. Every day is a struggle to get out of bed in the morning, he said one day at his support group. I know what you mean, said Thomas the Tank Engine. Who was a train but had somehow still managed to contract car AIDS. What keeps me going is the strength I get from my faith in the Lord. What a bunch of bullshit, said Mater the tow truck. God hates us. We're cars. We pollute the environment and destroy the planet he created. That's why he unleashed his AIDS. He's cleansing the earth of cars. Why do you think Pixar's investing in a spin-off franchise about planes? It's because we'll all be dead before they can make Cars 3. That's not true, said Thomas. Yeah, believe what you want, said Mater, but we'll all be dead in a few years, so until then I'm getting my rocks off while I still can. The tow truck stood up and pulled out his gigantic cock, a massive mechanical shaft covered in rust and axle grease. Who wants some of this? Come on. Everyone here's already infected. What have we got to lose? Put that thing away, shrieked Thomas. This is a safe space. Oh, shut up. Mater jammed his fat cock in the Thomas the Tank Engine smokestack. You want this more than anyone else, you big hypocrite. Incensed by the sight of a train's head chimney thing getting fucked by a truck, the support group quickly devolved into a massive orgy that resembled a bumper car rally. Vehicles plowed into each other left and right. A wealthy Porsche trying to compensate for its small penis face-fucked a lesbian Chevy Bronco with truck nuts. Truck nuts, you know, those fake novelty, the type that rednecks buy them and put them on under their car. A Japanese Toyota enlisted the help of five other cars to organize a bukkake on a student driver car. A student driver car, you guys, she's underage. Enough, screamed John. I can't live like this anymore. He wrapped his lips around the tailpipe of the lesbian Chevy Bronco and inhaled carbon monoxide until he felt everything go dark. Oh my God, screamed the Porsche. What's wrong? Asked Mater, pulling a sooty cock out from the hot coal furnace that was Thomas's locomotive asshole. John's dead. He choked himself to death on my fumes. Huh, said Mater. I guess you could say he died of autoerotic asphyxiation. Oh, Mater. All the cars had a good hearty laugh. 18 months later, they were all dead. The end.
Jesse Elias. Stay right here, man. Let's get everybody back up from round one. Damn. All right, so you guys will be voting on a winner with your applause. What did I miss? Okay. You guys will be voting on a winner with your applause. I'm going to first remind you of what everybody wrote, so no voting yet, and then we'll vote. We started with Mike Bridenstine with Karate Kid, then Solomon Giorgio with The Birth of Jesus, David Huntsberger with Cereal Mascots, Matt Ingebretson with 50 Shades of Grey, and Jesse Elias with Cars. So, pick a favorite. Starting with Mike Bridenstine, Karate Kid. Solomon Giorgio, Birth of Jesus. David Huntsberger, Cereal Mascots. Matt Ingebretson, 50 Shades of Grey. Jesse Elias, Cars. Your round one champion, Mr. Jesse Elias, with what I believe is his fourth win on this show. Big round of applause for everybody for you from round one. Thank you guys so much.
Well, that does it for round one, and congratulations once again to Jesse Elias. Tune in next week for round two with Baron Vaughn, Eliza Skinner, DC Pearson, and Aaron Whitehead. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help. As are positive comments. Negative comments can always be directed to the podcast Terrified with Dave Ross. Upcoming live shows include January 21st at NerdMelt in Los Angeles, January 30th, 31st, and February 1st at San Francisco Sketchfest. Details on those shows can be found at sfsketchfest.com. Or you can always join the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Facebook group or follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.